This is Aviator Cast, episode 2, V1, rotate, positive rate, gear up, and here we go.
Calling all aviators, pilots, and aviation lovers, welcome to Aviator Cast, where we close the gap between real aviation and flight simulation. Climb aboard, buckle up, and prepare for takeoff. Here's your host, Chris Palmer.
Welcome, 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 aviators. You've landed at Aviator Cast. My name is Chris Palmer. You could call me an aviation nut job. I just love things that fly. I'm a pilot myself and also very passionate about improving the way we look at flight training and flying itself in whatever way I can. I'm also the founder and owner of Angle of Attack, a flight simulation training company that is bringing you this podcast today. So we have made it to episode 2. I hope you enjoyed the last episode. You know, it had some rough edges, definitely. I just wanted to get my foot in the door and get an episode out there and get Aviator Cast started. I have a lot of great things prepared for you guys today. But first of all, I just want to thank you for being here. Thank you for taking the time to digest this information and for your commitment to become a better aviator. We certainly love our aviators and our trainees here at Angle of Attack, and we're glad that you are a part of what we are doing. So again, thank you for being here and welcome. In this episode today, we're going to talk a lot about autopilot use and hand flying your aircraft. So these are topics that are useful for both real world pilots and simulator pilots and anyone that's kind of in between that mix. So you will definitely find this useful. And so we're just going to dive straight into the topics and start with our first topic today.
And now the flight training segment.
All right, so in this first topic, we're going to talk about the age of autopilot. So in nearly every aircraft that rolls off the factory floor in today's world, they will all have some sort of autopilot, almost all of them. Autopilots are incredibly useful for flight and often even required. Now, the autopilot certainly isn't an enemy of a pilot, but if relied upon too much, it can degrade the basic skills of even the most talented aviators. So as we accept these new technologies into our repertoire, they must have a place among or even outside the core skills that make up who we are as aviators. Often with new aircraft or these new ideas of automated flight, we as pilots get ourselves into situational traps that put us in unnecessary danger. So we're going to cover this autopilot topic broadly. We're going to talk about the pros and cons, the thoughts and ideas about the autopilot, how it can help, hurt, and handicap us as aviators, and then also what we can do about it. But, you know, before we actually go into all that, the pros and cons, things of that nature, and defining what autopilots do for us, and, you know, how they can both hurt and help us, let's go into a brief history of autopilots. This is something that I wanted to study a little bit before I actually got into this topic, and I found it really interesting just how old autopilots are. So you'd be surprised to know, first of all, that the first autopilot was developed in 1912. Now, that really blew my mind because that is not long after the dawn of powered flight, right? So just soon after, 10 or so years, we're looking at the first autopilot being developed. Now, obviously, it's not going to be something as complex as what we're using today, where it's coupled with the GPS and it's very precise and smooth. These were more autopilots that were holding a specific heading and altitude and were very basic along those lines. But, you know, with that said, for the time, these had to be incredible inventions. So along with that, this first autopilot is actually showed at the Paris Air Show in 1914, where the guy that invented this, called Sperry, I think is how you pronounce it, he showed this off to onlookers at the air show, and he flew straight and level with his hands off the controls, basically. I don't know exactly how he proved that, if people just had their binoculars out or whatever. But anyway, he proved essentially that this technology was possible. And in the show notes, you'll actually find some links to some popular mechanic articles from back in the day that show how all this worked and showed the schematics of how this autopilot worked. And it's actually really impressive what these people came up with. And, you know, also interesting how early aviators were looking for an autopilot to assist them in their flight technique. So, you know, that's an interesting aspect of that too. There's obviously a need there that the autopilot fills, and that's been recognized since the beginning days of aviation. So as you can imagine, with a lot of aviation technologies, this was later developed by the military in the 1930s. So at that time, they had an aircraft that went and it flew on a specific course, straight and level, for 3 straight hours, which was quite an impressive feat. So it's just kind of the first, I guess, big breakthrough of this technology where they actually did plan to use this long term. So, you know, from there, the history of the autopilot really starts to accelerate because aviation itself started to accelerate. That largely came because of World War II, where we saw a huge jump in aviation technology just because the different sides of those battles, whether it be the Germans or the Japanese or the Americans or British, everyone was looking for a leg up when it came to aviation superiority. And so aviation technology just took off. We saw very, very high performance aircraft for that time that are even still impressive today. And just this huge jump. So along with that, you would obviously expect for autopilots to come along with that. And then quickly after World War II, or even before World War II, we were getting into regular passenger scheduled flight, things of that nature, where all of these technologies are very useful there too. So, you know, primarily during all of that time and in until the last, you know, several decades, it was primarily used in military, airliners, jets, you know, corporate jets, things of that nature. But in the last several decades, it's really pushed forward a whole lot in general aviation. And so today, if we're talking just about where we are today and how I open this segment, is it's so common today in small, single-engine, general aviation aircraft to have a very robust autopilot just because the technology is so advanced and it's cheaper and more accessible as a result. So we have even the capability of having small fly-by-wire systems in these types of aircraft. But, you know, generally what we're talking about here is a very basic unit that still works with precision and all the actuators and things of that nature. But that's where we've come. We've come from this being developed 100 years ago. Can you believe that? Just over 100 years ago, the first autopilot was developed, to where now it's accessible in almost every single aircraft, even small general aviation aircraft, which I found quite incredible. So that gives us an idea and something to build on when we think about the usefulness of an autopilot and just how much people are relying on it and how long aviators have needed such a tool. So with that, let's build a little more and talk about the different types of autopilots to consider. So when we talk about an autopilot, we're not talking about this overall, you know, overreaching subject here, because there are different types of autopilots. There are some autopilots that are roll control only. There are autopilots that are pitch specific, if you will. There's yaw control with things like yaw damper. And we should also consider some of the other autopilots, which, you know, this is kind of gray area, but at the same time, not. These are automatic systems that are assisting the pilots, and those others are SAS systems or stability augmentation systems. Auto throttle is one we should really consider as an autopilot, you know, tool, which is definitely one that is used quite a bit. And then other constant auto corrections that some systems make. So, you know, that could even, you could even consider that to be a fly-by-wire system, right? In the 787 or 777 or almost all of the Airbus series. Airbus uses a lot of these auto corrections. And to be quite honest, you know, there's a lot of military aircraft that the only reason they fly is because of the computers in the background making the improvements to the flight dynamics that the pilots themselves couldn't make. So that's the reason why things like the F-117 and the B-2 bomber can actually fly. And I've heard even the F-22 and the up-and-coming F-35, all those things fly just because of the computers operating it in the background, making millions of calculations on how to control the aircraft. And then the pilots can make what they deem to be regular inputs to make the aircraft fly as they had learned how to fly. So, you know, that may be a little too broad for this part of the discussion. But anyway, those are the different types of autopilots we should consider. Again, those are roll control, pitch control. We have yaw control, the SAS systems or stability augmentation systems, auto throttle, and then some of these fly-by-wire systems or the, I guess, computerized backbone of some of these autopilot systems. So what's behind all of this? All of this autopilot stuff, you know, we have, obviously these days we have a lot of computers that are doing the work, but at some point that becomes mechanical where the flight controls actually have to move. And so we're talking about, actual linkage with actuators to the flight controls, whether that be through a fly-by-wire system or what is most common with general aviation aircraft. Because you don't run into the large body problems that come with moving control surfaces, is just direct cable manipulation. So, you know, yes, there's a big computer component, which is actually the biggest component in these days, and you won't see a lot of mechanical autopilots. And then there is the mechanical part of it. Obviously, back in 1912, when Sperry invented the autopilot, it was all mechanical, and they worked out all this stuff to where, you know, computers obviously weren't involved, but these guys were clever enough to get those things to work back in the day. Were they as accurate as a Boeing 777 or an Airbus A321? No. Like, obviously, we've made a lot of headway in where we are in aviation today, but still quite impressive in what they did back then. So, you know, when we're talking about the autopilot system as a whole, we're talking about computers in the background these days that are making those decisions for us in order to correct our flight path accordingly to what we tell the system to do. And then in some cases, like with the auto corrections for some aircraft, what is programmed in that aircraft to make it fly the way it's supposed to. So, you know, that kind of covers, I guess, the general aspects of it, you know, where autopilot came from, what types of autopilots we have, and then what's behind it all. Now, I know that I overgeneralized what's behind an autopilot. It's an incredibly difficult system, or rather complex system, and I even learned a little bit about how the space shuttle was run. And this is really interesting. The space shuttle was run in this system where it had five different programming systems. Four of them were the same programming language. And, you know, those were all four different flight computers. And then the fifth one was made by a completely different team in a completely different programming language just to cross-verify the two. So there wasn't, I guess, a mix-up in language. So I found that really interesting. That's a technique that they use on some of the more complex systems. So these systems go in incredible depth, and there are obviously teams at Airbus and Boeing and Cessna and a lot of these big manufacturers, and I know I left out a great many of those. So there are teams that are making these autopilots, and that's all they work on. They work on continually refining how great they are and how precise they are and how smooth they are. And so there's a lot that goes into these systems, and they integrate with the aircraft these days in a large sense, especially when you're talking about airliners. You know, it's almost the exact brains of the system, and that's how it all operates. And then from there you have the other systems. But incredibly complex. So we're not going to go into too much depth in just how complex they are and all the different components that come with an airliner. You know, you're going to learn about those in your type rating if you go through one of those, and you'll have a better understanding of how that works. So now let's get into the overreaching kind of mindset stuff about the autopilot and how the autopilot has helped us, how it hurts us, and then kind of what we can do about that. So first of all, some of the pros about the autopilot. You know, I think for the most part, the pros definitely outweigh the cons. Otherwise, we wouldn't be using autopilot as much as we do. So, you know, this conversation isn't meant to bash autopilot or say that it's terrible or we shouldn't be using it. It's just, I guess, to open your eyes a little bit on making sure that autopilots aren't taking over your life, right? So keep in mind that as we go into the pros here, the pros are great and they far outweigh the cons, but we still need to be aware of the cons as we go throughout our aviation careers. So one of the biggest pros about the autopilot is that it reduces pilot fatigue. I remember when I was first flying in a general aviation aircraft, and it was the first time I was going through really long cross-country flights. You know, I was flying a Bonanza at the time that had extended tanks on it, so we could stay in the air for quite a while. And I just remember doing this flight from Nebraska to Utah. And during that time, there was a lot of uneven air and unstable air. And I just remember making constant corrections the entire time and us having quite a big headwind and it being something like a 5.5 hour flight. And I was just so exhausted by the time it was done because I had to make every single correction on that flight. And it was just so exhausting. So obviously, as pilots, if we are having to keep the aircraft by ourselves in a continual sense of stability and precision, as you know, we obviously want to do, we want to follow our flight paths to the best of our ability, and you know, that goes into efficiency and a lot of other things. If we had to do that constantly, it would just be way too much for us to handle amongst all the other things we need to do. Now, could it be done? Absolutely. We could definitely do that day in and day out if that's what we absolutely had to do. But we don't because we have an autopilot. So an autopilot reduces that pilot fatigue and allows us to get on to other things. And we'll talk about that a little more in another pro that will come up here. So that's the big one. I think that's the biggest one when it comes to pros of the autopilot is reducing pilot fatigue. And that's just a very big deal, I feel, that the autopilot does for all of us. So another point, another pro, is autopilots are often more precise than the pilot can be in many situations. So, you know, as pilots, we tend to overcorrect and even in some senses, undercorrect. And an autopilot is almost required in a lot of senses in order for passenger comfort. There are just things that the flight computers and the actuators and all those things can do with precision that us as pilots can't do. It's just, you know, it's not really rocket science. And I know it's kind of hard to let go of that pride and say, well, you know, that's not true. An autopilot definitely can't fly better than I can. Well, the truth of the matter is that it can. You know, there's a lot of factors that come into play here. And yes, the autopilot gives full attention on the flight path at all times, and that's what it does. And, you know, there are other systems it works with too, like the auto throttle. So yes, the autopilot is more precise than the pilot. You know, we have kind of the opposite view of that too that will come up in a con, but it is more precise than the pilots in many situations. So another pro of autopilot is it can reduce pilot workload and help you get ahead. So say that you're dealing with a lot of air traffic control, you're getting into IMC and you're having to prepare for your arrival and a lot of other things that come with those busy times of flying, right? Obviously, when you're in the middle of cruise, you have some time to think about what's going on, and things aren't moving as fast as they are during those busy times. So one of the things that an autopilot can do really well is it reduces your workload, and along with that, it can help you get ahead. So I wouldn't say that if you're in a terrible situation, you just flip on the autopilot and then try to get yourself ahead. The thing about an autopilot is it's there for you to monitor. It's just not something you have to constantly be on top of every single second like you would be if you were hand-flying the aircraft. So again, it can reduce your workload and help you get ahead of the aircraft, which especially as a solo pilot or a single pilot operator, that can help out tremendously and almost acts as a co-pilot, if you will, to assist you in doing what you need to do. And again, the caveat to all that is that you still need to monitor the autopilot. Kind of a close sibling or cousin to this is the autopilot allows pilots to focus on other things while they're monitoring it. So, you know, we can set it to do a certain thing and we can go away and focus on preparing our arrival for several seconds, or we can focus on a communication, or we can focus on some figures that we need to work on, or, you know, even breaking down maybe some efficiencies we'd like to get with the flight, whether that be getting a more direct heading or shortening our route with air traffic control. It just helps us in those types of situations where we can focus a little bit on other things. Again, the caveat to that is monitoring it at all times. Another pro to autopilot, and one that only specific airline operators will see, and I guess a very select few corporate pilots as well, because the aircraft that are capable of this aren't many, but that is Autoland. So there's actually a redundancy system built into some autopilots where several autopilots are used that allow the aircraft to land, if you will, in zero visibility and complete the rollout on the runway without basically seeing anything the entire approach. Now, I'm vastly overgeneralizing that situation because there's a lot of regulations that come into that and visibility minima and different categories of those situations. And you also have to be rated to do such things. And you have to have currency. You know, it's a very complex system that goes into making the auto land possible. But if that's a new concept to you, that an aircraft can actually land itself, it's definitely possible. And for airline pilots, you know, that's not a big deal. They do that stuff a lot. They have to practice that that auto land capability monthly, and the aircraft actually has to do that monthly as well. So Autoland isn't a new thing to airline pilots, but it may be new to you, say, if you're just getting into aviation right now. There are aircraft, there are autopilot systems that are capable of landing themselves, and that's called Autoland. And if you want to learn more about that, I'm sure you could search that on Wikipedia or something like that. In fact, I'll try to put that in the show notes as well so you can learn more about the Autoland system and how all that works. It's very incredible and is a prime example of what an autopilot can do that a pilot can't do, if you will. And along with everything else that comes with an autopilot, the pilots don't simply throw their hands up in this Autoland situation and say, okay, aircraft, you do it. You go ahead and just land. Monitoring is happening continually during this process, and the pilots are making sure that the system is working properly. And in addition, there is redundancy. So we're not just talking about one autopilot that's doing this situation. We're talking about several, two or three autopilots that are performing this procedure. And the last pro I came up with, and I know that there are many pros to the autopilot, and I'd love to hear your comments on other pros of the autopilot, but the last one I came up with is passenger comfort. You know, these autopilot systems just, they operate so smoothly these days that the passengers barely know when the aircraft is turning at altitude, you know. And if a pilot was to try to perform that maneuver at altitude, there's a really good chance, unless he's super experienced, that he's going to do some things that the passengers would feel, whether that's a little change in the G-forces or whatever it is. You'll notice that in an airliner is those things are done very smoothly. That's all done by autopilot. If a pilot absolutely had to take over and take control of that situation, I'm sure he'd do just fine. But it's definitely not recommended, and it would take constant monitoring, as hand flying does, from the pilot in order to get that to work. So those are the pros I came up with. Again, I know that there are more than that. You're welcome to write in and tell me some other pros that you have. So let's go over some of the cons of autopilot. And I guess this is the premise of this conversation, is how can the cons creep up and get a hold of us and decrease our skills as aviators? So first and foremost, one of the cons is pilots can become too reliant on the autopilot. And we see that a lot these days, even with professional pilots that are running into some issues with some pretty notable accidents recently in the last several years. One of those that comes up in my mind is the Asiana crash in San Francisco, the 777. Now, the 777 has an incredible safety record. This is only the second 777 that has been written off because of an incident, in this case, an accident, because a lot of people died. And as information about that accident is coming out, it's clear that the pilots of this aircraft were far too reliant on the autopilot system to do their work, and they weren't monitoring the aircraft in a basic way. And for many of you that are close to that investigation or you followed it closely, you know, I am overgeneralizing it, but at the end of the day, the bottom line is that the airspeed of the aircraft got way too low, and these guys essentially drove the airplane into a seawall because they weren't monitoring the aircraft correctly. Okay? So above and beyond anything else, above all of the idiosyncrasies and human factors, things that go behind it, that's the bottom line for this aviation accident, is these guys thought that the autopilot system was doing something that it wasn't, and then they weren't monitoring their airspeed. So it's just a really weird situation. I'm not saying that I wouldn't do the same thing if I was in that situation. I understand that really weird things happen in aviation accidents, and we as pilots should not have so much pride that we think those things cannot happen to us. But again, bottom line is the guys drove this airplane into a seawall, and people perished as a result. And I heard, you know, this is complete rumor, I could be totally wrong, but what I heard is the pilots of this aircraft, or at least one of them, said that one of the most difficult maneuvers to do in the 777 was a visual landing. And that just blows my mind, because these aircraft are incredibly capable, stable, and give you all the feedback and information you need to do that sort of thing quite easily as a pilot. So that's one of those things I just don't buy. And I guess why we're getting into these cons is because pilots can become too reliant on the autopilot. And in a lot of situations, and I see, this is creeping into general aviation as well, we're seeing that pilots are relying on the autopilot too much. All right, so we've kind of beaten that one to death. I think it's pretty obvious that that is a con of the autopilot. So the next one is, an autopilot can mean the long-term degradation of hand-flying skills. If you are in the habit of taking off and starting your climb procedure, turning on the autopilot and not turning it off again until you're, you know, turning base to final or whatever it is, then there is going to be a degradation of your hand flying skills, guaranteed. If you are not hand flying the aircraft and knowing what it feels like to control the aircraft, then over time, you will lose those skills. As I heard one pilot say, flying is a perishable skill and is something that does go away if you are not practicing it. So if we rely on the autopilot too much, it can mean that our hand flying skills will go away. And that is certainly something that I don't think any pilot wants. Next con is the autopilot can't think critically like a pilot can. So although these systems are very complex and they're doing a lot of calculations in the background and they're doing so many things, there is still a need for a pilot on the flight deck because we make critical decisions that the autopilot cannot make. You know, if we see an aircraft in front of us or a flock of birds in front of us, we have the reaction skills, whereas an autoflight system doesn't. Will there be a day when that happens? I have no idea, but I see that being a bit far off in that, you know, the human mind is very incredible at solving problems quickly. And I'm certainly not saying that computers can't solve problems quickly. We've all seen the proof that they can. But, you know, there are just things we as pilots can do that an autopilot can't do. And that's why we still have jobs. That's why airline pilots are still greatly sought after. And the experience that they have is valued so much, even with all of this flight automation that we have. So the last con I have, and obviously just like the pros, there are more cons that are available out there. And if you know of any, I'd love to hear your feedback. But another con is autopilots can mask issues with controls or your flight profile. So say that you're flying along and you start to build ice on the aircraft and your flight profile is changing. The autopilot will automatically correct for that because it's shooting for things like, you know, power and airspeed and altitude and heading. It's going to correct those things. But you'll notice if you're ever in those situations that as soon as you kick off the autopilot, the airplane will release those actuators and you're going to be doing a flight profile that's not normal. Because in normal circumstances, you would expect the aircraft to disengage and you're basically in that situation that you disengaged in. But it can become this situation where you aren't aware of these changes going on in the background because the autopilot is in control at all times. Another example of this, and perhaps a more basic example, is when you're flying with autopilot, it'll automatically correct for wind changes. And so that's why you see aileron and elevator, well, elevator trim is a basic one, but aileron, elevator, and rudder trim that take off those pressures, if you will. Now, in a lot of situations, using trim with the autopilot engage actually isn't allowed. So you just have to look into what your particular aircraft is. Your pilot's operating handbook says, and that'll tell you what to do there. But that, you know, that's another situation where it can mask what's going on with the actual aircraft. So we've now covered the pros and cons, and now we want to go to, I guess, in summary, what we've covered so far. So first of all, the autopilots, as we've seen, have come a long way, and we are now finding that they are making their way into newer general aviation aircraft that are very precise. I mean, we're talking about aircraft that are capable of doing LPV approaches down to minimums at very, very precise numbers, and they do that in pretty basic models of airplanes these days. Next, in summary, is there will come a day when general aviation aircraft will fly just as precise as today's airliners. Now, I say today's airliners because I pull from today's standards. I believe that airliners will obviously get more precise, and if we always measure general aviation against these passenger category aircraft that you know, need a lot more precision and redundancy in them, then we're always going to fall short in general aviation. But as far as what we have today in airliners, I do believe there will be a day where we have single engine aircraft that can auto land themselves, for example, and do so on an LPV approach in some random town in the middle of Wyoming where there's hardly an instrument system at all, except for what is satellite based, and just a lot of wild stuff. I'm sure there's a lot of things we're going to see in the future that will be very astounding as far as what autopilots can do and what the system as a whole will do for us. So we also covered that there are many different types of autopilots and different levels of precision. So again, we have some roll-only autopilots. We have some pitch-only autopilots. We have auto-throttle, the stability augmentation system, which finds its way into many different situations. And the thing that you need to be concerned about is what type of autopilot does your aircraft have? Are you familiar with how it operates? Are you familiar with maybe the idiosyncrasies of that autopilot? How do you cope with those? You know, kind of these different questions you need to ask yourself about the autopilots that you're using in the aircraft that you're flying. So again, there are a great many pros about an autopilot. In many situations, a properly functioning autopilot is required for certain phases of flight by regulation or by company SOPs. So we saw that the autopilot is required in an autoland situation. A lot of the airlines have specific rules that the pilots are to engage the autopilot above a certain altitude. So those are operating procedures and a lot of things in between where the autopilot is actually required in certain cases. So that goes back to the fact that an autopilot can and does fly more precisely in a lot of situations than a pilot can. Again, that doesn't absolve us of the responsibility to monitor what's going on with the autopilot. And then last but certainly not least, if you rely on an autopilot too often and don't find yourself practicing those hand flying skills, it may be time to disengage, if you will, and fly a bit by hand to get a feel for your aircraft. So if you are guilty of using your autopilot far too much, and there are situations where you can be hand flying and you aren't, in other words, it's not required that you're to use autopilot, I would challenge you to, you know, fly by hand, learn your aircraft and its flight profile better and become more familiar with it. Those things come in an incredible use when you're in those situations where you can't use autopilot for one reason or another, and then you will have a firm grasp literally on how to fly by hand. So in conclusion of this topic, I think it's safe to say that autopilots are a fantastic tool for pilots, and although there are some negatives or some cons, mostly for, I would say, GA pilots, these systems offer a whole lot of important help for aviators. So, you know, as GA pilots, we don't have a lot of experience with many different types of aircraft, and we certainly don't have the tens of thousands of hours behind us to say, you know, yes, I've done my share of hand flying, and I know that I got it. It's something that's really ingrained into the core of who I am as an aviator. And so it's especially something that as pilots, as generally aviation pilots, we need to look out for is making sure that as these systems are making their way into our aircraft, that we aren't relying on them too much and that we are maintaining those important hand-flown skills that will always be part of who we are as an aviator. So that's it. I hope you got something out of this flight training topic, and we will see you in the next topic.
And now, the flight simulation segment.
Okay, so welcome to the flight simulation topic. In this topic, we're going to talk about all hands on deck, or a discussion on hand flying the aircraft or your aircraft. So as simulator pilots, we see this shiny new aircraft that was just released from a great software publisher, and we clamor to go and fly that aircraft. This leads to be completely honest, a lot of inexperienced and untrained aviators flying the virtual skies. Now, you'd be surprised to know this, but 70% of our trainees that are hobbyists or aviation enthusiasts that fly with our simulator training do not know the basics of how to fly. Now, we find this kind of odd, as obviously our Aviator 90 course is free for all to learn, and that goes through a lot of the basics. So even the basic skills of landing, takeoff, taxi, and basic flight maneuvers aren't known by the vast majority of flight simmers, which you would think would not be the case, but at the same time, it does make sense because a lot of flight simmers haven't had actual training. And although we do have a free resource with Aviator 90, it's not like it's blaring in everyone's faces. We don't push it on anybody, if you will. So although we wouldn't expect you to completely ignore these amazing aircraft that come out that are released on the market often, we do at least think that all pilots should strive to at least get the basics down in conjunction with flying this new toy or this new simulation. So after our autopilot discussion, I want to take things a bit further along those lines. We think that all pilots, both virtual and real world, should be excellent and skilled aviators before relying too much on an autopilot. So what exactly does that mean? For me, that means you must become confident that you can precisely control an aircraft through all phases of flight, not just landing and takeoff. So obviously the landing and takeoff are those phases where it's common to not have the autopilot engaged, and we should be familiar with all phases of flight, not just those two, albeit difficult, phases of flight. Obviously, landing and takeoff are some of the two most, I guess, desired skills that aviators have, both real world and virtual, but there's so much more out there that needs to be learned. So let's discuss, I guess, how all of this has evolved, some of the challenges that you may be facing now, and how you can overcome these difficulties. So first, I want to talk about the average untrained flight simmer, and I've already touched on this a little bit. So you would think that starting off, the average untrained flight simmer is a young kid that's 14, just got a flight simulator from the store, and he's sitting there flying with his keyboard, and he doesn't know anything about how to fly. But 70%, again, going back to that number, of our pilots don't take Aviator 90. Now, that's across all demographics. Obviously, we have the younger kids, and it's actually one of our smaller demographics. We have the younger kids that are preparing to get their pilot's license and trying to get their toes in the water with aviation, so they're using a simulator at home. Which is very cost-effective for a younger kid. But this is across all demographics, and the largest demographic is from age 35 to 55. So people within that range, you know, there's far more people within that range that that are not skilled at some of these basics than there are younger pilots or even older retired virtual pilots. So this applies to everyone, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. So, you know, there's no sense of pride here and really no shame either. Everyone is affected by this problem. With all of, I guess, flight simmers, it goes back to episode one, where the reason that flight simmers often couldn't fly is because of health reasons or medical reasons and because of financial reasons. And so with that idea in mind, very little to no experience is had by the average flight simmer. So in most cases, people haven't even taken an introductory course, or they haven't even gotten the solo on a private pilot, or even taken an introductory flight, if you will. So going out with an instructor and talking about taking a private pilot course. So they don't have any experience with an actual instructor in an actual airplane, and know very little. Now, the reason why we use video as a medium to teach pilots is because it's the second best thing to actually flying hands-on with the aircraft with an actual instructor sitting there. So it's the second best thing to actually doing the real thing. And in that sense, seeing is believing. So if you're a virtual pilot, for example, I guess the point I'm trying to make here is if you're a virtual pilot, you haven't gone through the real training, you know, say you're 40 years old and you fall within the vast majority of that demographic and you don't know the basics, the chances are that you haven't seen exactly what it's like to fly an airplane from a cockpit's perspective. And I know that sounds very basic, but you can read a manual all day long and learn about a takeoff procedure. But when you actually go to do a takeoff procedure, you get all of the little movements in between the instructions you would get in a manual that speak volumes just by being able to watch it. You see the degree or the intensity of the rotation, which is often a lot smoother than you would think. You know, in a manual, you'll read, for example, with an airliner, that is 2.3 degrees per second. You know, what does that mean? What does that translate into as far as how it looks? And so that's why we chose video as a medium to teach that, because it's the second best thing to actually being there and doing it. So, so we have, I guess, a lot of inexperienced aviators, and I'm not trying to shame anybody. This isn't about that, and we'll get to that more in a little bit here. But we have a lot of experienced aviators going in and flying complex simulations like the 737, 777, MD-11, and a lot of other aircraft in between. I would say that even if you're trying to go out and fly a Cessna 172 and you don't have these basics down, that's dangerous enough. But we have these shiny new toys and all this great knowledge that we can learn, and the kind of this dream of being an airline pilot and being able to taste what that's like with the simulator. And so we go out and we learn with these things. I'm not saying stay away from that. I'm certainly not saying that. But what I'm saying is that, there are the basic skills that need to be learned. And today, that basic skill that we're going to talk about is hand flying. So you and I are both guilty of this. At any level in someone's aviation career, we can all learn more. And I guess there's that uncomfortable area too, where I think we have to be a little more curious than where we currently are in our training. We have to be pushing ourselves, if you will, into new areas that are new and different to us, rather than just being 100% knowledgeable about a specific subject before we actually go and we actually fly. I don't believe in that. I believe that people should be going out and actually doing these things, not just reading them in a manual and thinking they're an expert. I don't believe in that at all. I think there has to be, again, a bit of discomfort in the learning process in order to push us forward, and also that curiosity that we should have. All right, so I've railed on you enough. I hope you don't feel shamed and blamed and like you're this little guy trying to fly a flight simulator. That's not what I'm after here. I'm simply defining the issue, right? And I'm defining it because now we are going to talk about how we can fix that and what we can do in order to make this a positive experience and get you guys ahead, get you to that place where, yes, you do know the basics, and so you can build on that. And so you are a rock star at flying the 737 or 777 or whatever aircraft you choose to fly in. But there has to be that foundation. Again, so going back to the positives, one of the biggest things I've noticed about flight simmers is that they are incredibly passionate about aviation. Now, even with seasoned airline pilots, I see that kind of the light goes out of their eyes, right? This is just another job for them. They've gone through a divorce. As a result, we call that AIDS or aviation-induced divorce syndrome. And kind of the light is out of their eyes. It's just another career. But what I've noticed with flight sim enthusiasts is that they are incredibly passionate about aviation. They're the type of guys that will get on YouTube and watch videos of airliners taking off for hours, or they'll get in and watch a tutorial on how to fly a specific aircraft for hours. And, you know, that, I guess, to be completely honest. That's the reason why we are where we are today, is because we have all these passionate aviators. And by we, I mean Angle of Attack. We have all these passionate aviators, virtual aviators, that want to learn how to fly like actual pilots do. And so they come to us to get that realistic training. Okay. So first and foremost, you know, yes, we have to find the issues, but more important than that, I know that you guys are absolutely passionate about aviation. Another positive is there are a great many tools out there to learn, and most of those are really cheap for flight sim enthusiasts, and they are often free. So a lot of resources, not only here with Angle of Attack, but you've got stuff on YouTube, things like this podcast. You know, this isn't the only aviation podcast out there. It really is just the nature of the internet. There's so much great information out there on how to become a better pilot from even a real pilot perspective that a virtual aviator can bring over into flight simulation. So that's big, is having all of those resources out there for you to grab. You know, on top of that, I guess just like anything else, maybe this is a Zen habit of life or something, but time is on your side, and just a little commitment each day will ensure that you can become a better virtual aviator. It's just how things are. If you are going to commit to learn a little bit every single day, or a little bit a week, or you have monthly goals, whatever it is, kind of going back to our previous episode of setting New Year resolutions, is, you know, you can get to where you want to go. It just takes a little work at a time. You don't have to do a private pilot course or a multi-engine course in a week. You don't have to cram it in. It's just little bit or little bits of consistency that you need to gain with your flight training. And I really love the aspect of curiosity when it comes to flight training. I think we should all be generally more curious about what we are getting into, and, you know, becoming more curious about how an ILS system works, or how an Autoland system works, or the challenges that come with hand flying, or, you know, really just that general curiosity that sparks us to want to learn more or to learn deeper about a specific subject. So those are the positives, and I think the positives are obviously better to focus on. So let's focus on the great positives that, you know, you are all incredibly passionate. There are a great many tools out there, and it just takes a little bit each day to make this happen. And then, you know, now what? Now it is time to be an aviator. So here are just a few tips or a few things I came up with that I think will really, really help you out. And I know I've shared a few of those that you may have drawn so far, but first and foremost, for you guys that fly jets, just go out and fly a GA airplane, a general aviation airplane. Find one you love, one that you have a particular draw toward for whatever reason, whether it was the first one you sat in as a kid or whatever, and then just go out and go somewhere. Just choose maybe your local airport and then choose another place that you can go down the road a little bit. But just go out and fly a GA airplane. Don't ignore this very integral part of what aviation is. It's really easy to just jump in, go somewhere, and enjoy it. So we call this low and slow, and I'm sure you've heard that term before, but just enjoy the scenery, fly around by hand, no autopilot at all, and just enjoy it. Just enjoy the fact that you're flying and going somewhere, and that you're in control of your heading and your destination and wherever you want to go. You know, obviously, that's not what we do as pilots most of the time, especially if you are trying to simulate the airline environment with these shiny new toys, is we're going from point A to point B. There are so many rules and regulations in between that we get lost in all of that mess, and we forget the love of aviation in the first place, which is that the world is at our fingertips. We can really go anywhere, and that's a particular draw to simulators, because we can go and experience many different areas of the world from an aviation perspective whether it be what it's like to fly in Australia and what it looks like there, or what it's like to fly in Asia or Russia, all of these different things that you can, that you can do. So again, low, slow, no autopilot. Now this next one is a little bit touchy feely, but I think you guys should get in touch with your inner aviator by digging into the nostalgia of aviation. So if you go to the show notes for this episode, just go over to aviatorcast.com. I want you guys to look at this picture, or a few pictures I've put on here, of Charles Lindbergh. Now, several years ago, I read the book by Charles Lindbergh titled We, and that isn't yes in French. That is we as in you and I. But this book really, really started this feeling for me that we are aviators and we are not pilots. And I do believe the two are distinct and unique and separate themselves from each other. Charles Lindbergh is an incredible example of heart and skill and all of these different things that just really astounded me from a basic core level of why I love to fly. You know, it's funny, one of my favorite things about his book was how he abandoned a few airplanes where he did all he could and he just walked out on the wing and he bailed. You know, he had a parachute obviously, but he just abandoned ship because he did all he could. He was upside down and whatever. He got out of the airplane. And I just found that that this guy was doing things that you and I can't even imagine. He was exploring the world in a way that hadn't been explored at the time. And that's what we need to get back to. And not all of this, you know, airliner stuff and getting distracted by all these great things. Are they awesome? Yeah, like, yes, I really love to this day to hear the sound of engines spooling up, see them take off, or see him break through on minimums and do a landing that way. I love everything about airliners, believe me, but I realize that there's this core to flying, this thing that all people were made to fly, that we were made to do this. And I don't believe we really get that feel by simulating the airline environment. We get it a little bit, and I think that's why it's part of why it's appealing, but it's those basics that I think are really, really great. So with that said, going in, doing, just taking the aircraft and going somewhere, a couple other points here is do some unpredictable things with the aircraft. Try new things. Do a loop, you know, do a steep turn. Do some really short base to final approaches and just try new things and see what you can do with the controls and see how you can manipulate the aircraft to get it to do specific things. You know, that can be really, really fun in a simulator. And I, by the way, disclaimer, only do this in a simulator. I wouldn't expect you to go and try these crazy new things in the real world. But, you know, just go and do something different instead of just flying straight and level and trying to get somewhere. Just go do something different. Do some pattern work, go and fly through a canyon at low level, something like that. Just something strange and off map, you know, off autopilot, obviously. And another one, fly in the difficult airports. There are a lot of crazy airports around the world. There's this one called Lukla in Nepal. I don't know if I pronounced Lukla correctly, but it's this upslope runway, right? So the pilots come and they can only land one way, which is uphill, and then they can only take off downhill, which is pretty steep grade. I would guess that it's about 15 to 20 degrees in that range, if not more. It's a really steep hill. And so there's a lot of these different challenging airports around the world that you can fly into. And, you know, obviously when you, especially if you start to talk about bush flying, you can do a lot of crazy things when you're talking about bush flying. You know, bombing over trees and landing on a lake or whatever it is. There's so many things you can do with bush flying, and that would be a perfect thing to do in this particular situation. So go out and try to find some difficult airports. And then last, but certainly not least, and what we're really trying to get at here is become a champion of hand flying. Become the guy that is just a rock star at hand flying the aircraft because you've practiced it so much, right? You've spent that time to go through and learn here and there, and you take some breaks from flying these airliners, and you go in and you fly these general aviation aircraft. I guess another point to this is just go have fun again. You know, it's not all business all the time. Go and have fun flying. And I challenge you to do that again with just go find a great general aviation aircraft you have, do it low and slow, get in touch with your inner aviator by digging into the nostalgia of aviation. So looking at how they did it in previous years at the dawn of aviation. Charles Lindbergh's book is great. I'll put a link to that in the show notes so you can see or perhaps get a chance to read that book if you'd like. There's another book called Stick and Rudder, which is a great, great book. That's more of a perspective on actually how to fly, but it's more from a theoretical perspective. So that's a good one. I'll put that in the show notes as well. Do odd and unpredictable things. Go and just be wild. Do something different. You know, again, fly in a canyon at low altitudes. Do close pattern work, whatever it is. Fly in the difficult airports. And all that will help you just become a better aviator. And because you're hand flying, and those skills will assist you. Now, if you don't know the basic skills of how to take off and land, I realize that there are specific pointers on how to do all of that correctly. There's a lot of material out there that you can gather together to make these things happen, even on YouTube and things like that. We do have a comprehensive kind of A to Z course on a lot of these private pilot perspective things that you can get from us. It's totally free. Aviator90.com. Go check that out. If you just kind of like an all-in-one solution and really no strings attached, totally free. I guess the overreaching idea here is to get the relationship between you and your aircraft mended, right? You've harmed your aircraft by insulting it, by using the autopilot all the time. So it's time to become intimately familiar again with the beauty of how an aircraft handles by hand. So I'm completely aware that this is going to be difficult at first. You may crash the simulator many times, especially if you're trying some of those crazy things. But I promise that if you do this and you do it often, that you will learn very quickly. And as a result, you'll experience one of the most fulfilling aspects of flying, which is simply you flying the aircraft, as simple as that is. So let's wind down this episode of Aviator Cast. That is it for the flight simulation topic. Today's music for this episode is brought to you by Atrocilus. You can download this aviation-themed album for free by liking Atrocilus on Facebook. And to the Angle of Attack crew, many thanks go out to them for all of their hard work to make this episode possible, and also all of the other training material that we put out there. And in general, just keeping this business running and so we can continue to serve you. If you did enjoy this episode, make sure to subscribe via iTunes or another popular podcast service that you may be using. Additionally, leave others a review and share why you love this podcast. It's really easy and will go a long way to help others learn about Aviator Cast. Otherwise, you know, it doesn't pop up in iTunes. And at least not as one of the popular podcasts in aviation. And some people may miss this great content. Also, you can subscribe for email updates at aviatorcast.com. And that will allow you to get instant updates on when an episode is released. And although that will automatically kind of go into iTunes, if you don't have iTunes and that's not really something you use, you can certainly just subscribe and we will send you a notification about when the next Aviator Cast episode is released. Last but certainly not least, you can start with the basics. As we've talked about a lot in this episode with Aviator 90. You can also learn instrument procedures with Aviator Pro, and we also go into communications and multi-engine with Aviator Pro quite a bit as well. Or you can even fly one of the many popular aircraft out there, like the 737, 747, 777, MD-11. We have extensive courses on each one of these aircraft, and you can learn more about that at flyaoamedia.com. If you'd like also, if you'd like to send us direct feedback, feel free to do that at flyaoamedia.com as well. We have some contact information there. And, you know, send us ideas for what to do for an episode, or tell us directly how you feel about this podcast. And we'd really love to hear from you. We answer all of our replies directly, and we just really love to be involved on a one-on-one basis, if you will. So again, thank you for joining this episode of Aviator Cast. It's really great to do this stuff. I'm passionate about flying and passionate about potentially being able to improve the way you look at aviation. And I'm certainly not saying that, you know, I'm some wise guy out here, but I have had a little bit of perspective on this, and I'm just overjoyed to have you here with us. So, we hope to see you on the next episode, and until then, throttle on.
5 minutes ready. 5 minutes in the shoreline, turn left heading 235, maintain 2000, runway 25 right, clear for takeoff.
Clear for takeoff, 25 right, United 580.